Welcome to the Sons of Technology Clubhouse. Ditch your fear at the door, take a risk, and enjoy the ride with your hosts, Joe Marquez and Kyle Anderson.
Welcome, everybody, to another fantastic episode of the podcast by the Sons of Technology. We have a great episode here for you today because we are all going to be doing quite a bit of learning. It's no secret that we talk a lot about Google, right? The Google Workspace, the Google Apps, the Google Extensions, and so on and so forth. And when we start talking about Microsoft, we start jumping into an area that we kind of know. Because Kyle, we were talking about this earlier. We know Word, we know PowerPoint, we know Excel. But when you start getting into the Office 365 ecosystem, the Sway ecosystem, a lot of these different things, I haven't used those in the classroom. And so that's why we brought Tyler on here for this episode, because he is an MIE expert. He uses these tools in the classroom. So we wanted to bring him on so he can discuss a little bit or extend a little bit about what we talked about in our last episode, which was EDU certifications. And we were kind of like, well, we don't really know much about the Microsoft certifications other than you go to the Microsoft educator portal, do some tests, and you get points and you become an MIE. Yay. Right. So we wanted to dive a little bit deeper because the Microsoft products are great. It's just I don't use them very often. So that's what we are going to dive in deep today. But before that, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves. So my name is Joe Marquez. I am Director of Academic Innovation for Q. I am a past eighth grade science teacher and a educator out of the Central Valley of California. And you can find me on the Twitters at JoeMarquez70. And as always, my partner in innovation, Kyle Anderson. Kyle, introduce yourself.
Yes, indeed. Kyle Anderson. I am a special education teacher in Las Vegas, Nevada. You can find me on Twitter at AndersonEdTech. Same thing with Instagram. I have a blog by the same name, AndersonEdTech.net. I have a book that I wrote called To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk-Taking. That is available on Amazon, on BarnesandNoble.com through my publisher, EduMatch Publishing. And it is purely coincidental that this episode is episode 65, or as we number them, 065. And we are going to be focusing our words today and our learning on Office 365. So the coincidence there, it's there, but it is purely coincidental. We did not plan this out. And yes, we did reach out to one of the experts out there, literally a Microsoft expert, Tyler Keefe. Tyler, you've been on the show before, but go ahead and take a moment to introduce yourself to those that may be listening for the first time.
Yeah. Hey, I am Tyler Keefe. I am a technology integration coach up here in Nampa, Idaho. Before that, I was a fifth grade teacher for 13 years and going into my second year of being a technology integration coach. And then a couple other things that I'm doing. I am the host of my own podcast on the side called The Teacher Dudes. We have some fun with that. And then here lately, my son Zane and I, we have been doing a lot of live streaming. So we're kind of getting into that realm, and he is turning 8 tomorrow. So I'm glad we're able to do this episode recording a little bit early so that we can focus on that tomorrow. So yeah, it's fun.
Now, Tyler, one of the things I noticed the other day was you were live streaming Luigi's Mansion 3, and you stated that you had never played that game before. I have played that game religiously, and I've beat it several times. I love that game. It's one that I haven't played it in a while now, but it's one that I will go and pick up and start from the beginning and just go through it over and over again because that is a great game. So I hope that your experience with it has been as good as mine and that you're starting to pick up on it a little bit.
Oh yeah, no, the game's a blast, and I've heard that, you know, it's a good one, just never really played it. Zane saved up his money and bought it, and so I was kind of watching him, and I'm like, hey, this looks like fun. And, you know, the trend right now is everybody's live streaming everything, and Zane wants to do that too, so I'm like, hey, let's just do it together. And it's kind of fun because he will be my narrator, and read the captions for me, and he does all the voices and all that stuff. But it's even more fun because he helps me solve the puzzles and do the critical, you know, thinking through it. So it's not just us playing. He's actually, you know, helping out and doing it. And, you know, it's fun. It's a challenge at times because some of it we both don't know what we're doing, and so we've only had to look up what to do once so far, but it is a blast. And, you know, definitely recommend that game to anybody looking for a good kid problem solving game.
I think the last time I played a Luigi's Mansion game was the original one. I think it was on like Super Nintendo or something. And, you know, and back then I liked the fighting games or Mario Kart, those kinds. And so when I was playing, I'm like, you mean you have to think? Ah, forget this game. But now that I'm older, I'm intrigued by it. So I might actually have to go off and get Luigi's Mansion just because, you know, when you talk about critical thinking and puzzle solving, those are fun now. So I definitely want to take a look at that. Now, Tyler, I know you listened to the last episode about the certifications. You know, we talked about the flip grids. We talked about the Nearpods. We talked about the Pear Decks, all those things. And of course, we talked about Google and Microsoft. And one of the big differences that we mentioned was that with Google, you have to study all their separate tools, you know, the Google Docs and the Google Slides and the Google Sheets, all the different apps within Google Workspace. And then you take a all-encompassing exam called the Google Level 1, a Google Educator Level 1 certification exam, which encompasses both multiple choice and then problem-solving questions. But Microsoft does it in a little bit different way. They actually have modules that you can actually select the tools, dive deeper into those tools, and take a small exam after each module. And I said, I like that model because you're focused on that one tool. You're focused on learning about it, and then you are assessed on that, and then you accumulate points. And if you hit a certain number of points, you're designated as an MIE, a Microsoft Innovative Educator. But if you want to go farther, there's another process to become an MIEE, right? And a Microsoft Innovative Educator Expert. And I don't know much about that. I know it's like a self-nomination, or you can have somebody else nominate you, but I don't know much. And so Kyle and I were like, how can we get more information to our listeners about this process? And we both said, Tyler, let's bring Tyler on because you work with these tools daily with your staff and with students. And so we're like, let's bring Tyler on and let's just pick his brain about this whole thing. So before we get started with that, can you talk about how you got started using these Microsoft tools, how you use them in your classroom, and then how you started to investigate more to become that MIEE or that Microsoft Innovative Educator Expert?
Yeah, that, you know, say that 12 times fast.
Saying it once was difficult.
No, you know, when I first got into teaching in 2007 was my first year. And back then we had, you know, Office 2006, 2007, I don't even remember the exact version then. And it was just your basic Word, PowerPoint, Excel. We had Publisher and then Outlook. And so we were just tied to, you know, the old desktop computers with the monitor that's now literally the size of my whole desk. And so just using it for the basic stuff, so making letters to send home, you know, PowerPoints, you know, that kind of stuff, the basics. Then about 2012, they started out calling something called SkyDrive, which is now called OneDrive. And so I was one of the first teachers in my district to actually test out SkyDrive and the Office, what we call now Office 365. And so I dove in then. I'm like, okay, this is going to be the future. And so I just decided, hey, we're going to jump in. But the other funny thing about me and then our district is at the elementary levels, we are all Apple devices. So teachers have a MacBook Air and an iPad. Students all have iPads, but yet we're a heavy Microsoft district as far as the software goes, which is sounds odd to some, but I'll be honest, the Apple versions of all the 365 products I actually find to be much better than the Windows version. And there are many people out there that have heard the same thing, just if it's because of the aesthetics or, you know, how well they run on an Apple versus a Windows machine. But back then in the 2012, I posed a question to our IT director and I said, hey, you know, we have this ability. Is there a possibility to have students get their own email address and have access to these, the Office 365 tools as well? And he kind of sent me back a snarky little email and is like, why? You're talking about 10-year-olds in fifth grade. I'm like, well, because that's where we're going and why not? You know, do we have to pay anything for licenses? He's like, well, no. I'm like, okay, then let's try it out. So back then we had to get permission from parents and go through the whole nine yards and all that stuff, which it seemed like a bear, but in reality, it opened up so many doors because back then I shifted from doing everything paper, pencil, or they do a report and we print it out and then I have to hand grade it and all that stuff to, hey, let's just do it electronically and get things going that way to where we're at now, you know, coming off of the pandemic year and a half where everything is being done on the iPad. Everything that we do at my school, you know, we're doing everything through Teams and OneNote and Flipgrid and a bunch of all these different things to where now if I handed a kid a piece of paper, they might look at me weird. Whereas before it was, I handed them their iPad and they're like, what do you want me to do with this? So that's kind of everything of that in a nutshell, I guess, in the quickest kind of way I could say it.
Now, when you were starting with this, did the students have access to SkyDrive or were you having them utilize the on-prem products, you know, the installed products on the machines? Or the apps, I guess you would say, on the iPad? Because I will tell you this. I used to run a laptop camp for the district that I worked in, and we were a dual ecosystem district. It was all dependent upon the school site or the teacher on if they were going to use the Microsoft products or the Google products. So I had to train the students on how to utilize both. And, you know, getting the students to understand the difference between working on the on-prem Microsoft Word versus the Office 365 Microsoft Word was a very difficult task. Whereas like with Google, there's only one option. It's the online version. It's the web version. Whereas with Microsoft, it was a dual version. Did you have that issue as well? Or did you stick with one version and just run with that?
You know, back when I first started with this, there was the complete two different versions and they did not talk to each other. And so we had the on-device save and then we had the in the SkyDrive, you know, then now it's OneDrive version that was saved. And teaching the kids how to navigate that web page back then was not what it is today. You know, I'll be honest, it was frustrating to get there. And it was really frustrating because back then it wouldn't save the way it does today. So if the kids create it on the device and then they upload it to OneDrive, then they re-download it, work on it, and then have to re-upload it, you know, this back and forth process. And if a kid downloads it, it's in the download and that gets deleted, then you're toast. You know, that we couldn't recover things like we can today. So that was not fun, but it was doable. You know, it was better than nothing, I guess. But, you know, with the innovations that they've had now where you can open up the web document in the device, you know, platform itself, it makes it so much easier because every change you make in the actual program versus the web-based, it's going to show up everywhere instantaneously. So, you know, definitely I had those issues, but not anymore because of the innovations they have.
That's very good to know because I know there are some teachers out there that tried in those early stages and they picked a team and went with it, right? And they tried to do the on-prem save or the online save, and it didn't sync up and it didn't work the way they wanted. So they said, you know, forget this. I'm just going to use Google. So knowing that that is fixed now, I'm hoping that teachers now can be like, okay, now that that issue is fixed, I want to try it again. Kyle, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say that my last district, when I was in Carson City, I was fortunate enough that we had both Google and Microsoft. So for the most part, teachers use the Google universe, whereas administrators in central office, they still were using the Microsoft universe. So I actually had access to both. Our email was in Outlook, which I'm not going to get into words about it, but I definitely prefer the Gmail over Outlook for multiple reasons. And then Google's calendar versus the Microsoft calendar, I preferred as well. But what was really cool, though, to see was that for the longest time, I had used things like Word, PowerPoint, Excel on the desktop versions or whatever. And that was an issue I can remember, Tyler, you were mentioning before, where the Office 365 online versions, they didn't talk to the ones on the desktop. But by the time I got to working in Carson City, that update had been there to where I could open up a document on my desktop version. And as long as I saved it to my OneDrive, I could then go into the online version and work on it from there. So if all of a sudden I was working on, say, a Chromebook that didn't have the desktop version of Microsoft Word, I could still work on it because I could then open it up in the web-based version of it. Now, one thing I noticed too, and maybe there's been some updates, is that there was things that you could do in the desktop version that you could not do in the online version. I know like working with tables in a Word document was a lot easier to do in the desktop version versus the online version through OneDrive. Is that still kind of the case?
Yeah, you know, it is getting a lot better. The online version of all these definitely looks and feels the same, or at least as close to it as they possibly can. There are some things, you know, the full product has, you know, the more robust, the power behind it that it can do. But as far as the basics, like you were talking about the table stuff, the inserting pictures, you know, that kind of thing, that's all cleared up. And it's really based on which web browser you're using. If you're using, and not even so much anymore, to be honest, but it used to be that if you were using Internet Explorer versus Chrome, it was going to be a much different experience as far as how you copy and paste, even, because some of them you had to copy and paste with the mouse and it would work, and other ones you had to copy paste with the keyboard and it would work. So it was just kind of some weird little nuances, but for the most part they're getting there. And even on the iPad now, as I'm looking at my iPad here, they have a new app that's just called Office, where it has all the Office doc or platforms in one. You don't have to download Word, Excel, PowerPoint as standalone apps. It's just all built into this one Office app. And that's really what I've been using. When they announced that for the iPad, I deleted all the other ones, the standalones, because I really wanted to dive in and try this. And I haven't noticed any difference at all. So it's saved space on the iPad, and just the ease of use has been phenomenal.
That's really good to know. I mean, because yeah, it can be cumbersome downloading each individual item, you know, because that's the way it is with Google products right now, right? If you want to work with slides on a device, you have to download the Slides app or the Docs app or the Drive app, right? And so knowing that Microsoft has bundled it, I guess you would say, works out really well. I like that, you know, quite a bit. You know, I think what Kyle was talking about is that you have this company that has a complete robust suite that is traditionally something that is on a computer. And so they added features to it that would work on a computer. And as computers got more powerful, they added more features to the products. And then when this cloud idea started coming in to fruition and 2008, 2010, 2012, and Microsoft started switching over to that because they saw the popularity of Google, people were kind of like, well, wait a minute, this is like Microsoft Word Lite. This is PowerPoint Lite. But the issue was they had such a great product on the computer, you can't bring all of that to the web right away, right? Whereas Google built it from the web up. right? So I think that's where people's mindsets kind of shifted a little bit. They're like, well, you know, Google's works like this. Microsoft's doesn't quite. It's because Microsoft was in that transition stage of trying to get a product that worked really well on a machine to work really well on the web. And I think they kind of got caught in that transition at that early stage in that 2012 era, right? When we started seeing a boom of one-to-one programs happening. So knowing everything that you're saying right now, hopefully our listeners are like, oh, maybe I can give it another shot, especially if you're in a district that is a dual ecosystem district that allows you to use Microsoft and allows you to use Google. Why not try out both of them, right? So I love this conversation because it really, I still have a bad taste in my mouth from 2012 when I'm trying to teach these students the way to use Office 365 and it's not working. And I'm like apologizing to this. I'm sorry. It's supposed to work. It's not working. I don't know why. I don't know. And I'm like, you know, so I had this, I guess, trauma from that situation. I never went back. So knowing that these have been fixed, I'm hoping that people will start saying, let me go back into the pool, the Microsoft pool, and try it out.
Yeah, you know, as you were talking there, I went ahead and I grabbed my iPad to look, and just in their Office app for the iPad, you can now do Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and then Lens. Now, what Office Lens is, this is for, you know, listeners that have never heard of this. Lens is an absolute game changer for many different reasons. I'm sure we can all remember having to go down to the copier to scan a document, and only to then email it out. And it was just cumbersome. And then you're like, okay, I scanned it, but what I want to do is actually edit the document after I scanned it on my computer, but you had to retype it and all that stuff. What Lens actually allows us to do now is we can scan a document, scan a paper, and it will recognize the text. It'll recognize images, and you can bring that in to Word and then start actually editing that document, which is awesome. We reconstructed a graph out of a book, an older book, and our school counselor just, you know, she's like, I don't have time to recreate all this. What can I do? And she brought it to me, and within 5 minutes it was boom, done. And it was editable. Everything, you know, could be sent out as an email to whoever. And the other really cool thing with Lens in there is you can have any document, scan it, and then use Immersive Reader. So if you have those kids that, you know, just cannot read as well, or they need it in a different language, give them the handout, teach them how to use Lens. They'll scan it and it'll read it in Spanish, read it in English. It'll whatever, you know, you need it to do, which is another just huge. It's a game changer. And it's something that our SPED teachers have been using quite a bit. And the second that I showed them that once, their eyes just lit up. They're like, this is going to change everything for our kids. And it showed this year. These kids are now confident in what they're doing. Sure, they have to have headphones on to listen to it. Yeah. But it leveled the playing field just enough that it boosted their confidence. And the Immersive Reader is within all the products. It's in OneNote, Teams, all the Office stuff. It's even on the web now. Immersive Reader's in Minecraft. It's in Flipgrid. It's everywhere. So they're coming out with a lot of stuff, and it's awesome. It's awesome to see that they're really taking that shift towards helping everybody, not just those that can, but they really want to hit everybody as hard as they can with as much as they can to help them out and make it equitable.
Yeah, it's no secret that I love Immersive Reader. I love Immersive Reader. It's great. And I mean, because all these web products are utilizing the API of Immersive Reader to give that accessibility. And I love the picture dictionary, right? Because if a student doesn't understand the word, they can hover over it and it will bring up images of what that word represents in student-friendly images. And it really helps our emerging readers or ESL students to identify the word and what it connects to as a verb or adjective or noun. So that's very important. So I love that fact. And I love Office Lens. I have it on my Android phone, of course. I love Office Lens because when you go to a conference and people are, you know, doing a slide deck up at the top, you can just hover that lens over. It'll frame just the projector slide, and it'll bring that slide in, and it'll grab the text for you, and you can send it to a variety of different locations. And I think having students being able to identify doing that as a daily routine is very important, because people know, for me, I don't think you should be using a computer or device 100% of the time. I still think our students need to be writing. I think they need to be drawing. I think they need to be doing all those things. But everything needs to be captured in a single location, which is online, like a digital binder or an e-binder. An immersive reader, Office Lens allows that to happen. The students can take their notes in an analog fashion with paper pencil, hover over that, take a picture of it and send it to their OneNote as a learning artifact. And if their handwriting is good, then it can grab that handwriting and turn it into text. And that's a big if their handwriting is good, because mine doesn't quite get picked up.
Yeah, mine wouldn't work too well. And one thing that they just came out with in Teams is they built that Office Lens into Teams. So if you push out an assignment to the students and, like, say it's art or drawing or whatever, then the kids can now take a picture straight from Teams. It uses Lens and it turns it in through Teams that way. So, you know, with their distance learning, crisis learning, whatever learning we're going to call it, that was huge, because the kids could still do it physically and still turn it into those teachers. So that's all, it's just all becoming just everything. So, yeah.
Now, we've talked about a few different tools now. We've talked about PowerPoint, Excel, Word, which is, I would assume most listeners are aware of those at least, and maybe have used them extensively. But now we've also talked about some other tools like Teams and Sway and just some of these other ones that maybe people aren't familiar with. And then OneNote's another one that maybe you haven't heard of before. So Tyler, if you could take a minute to maybe think about some of those tools that are out there available in the Microsoft universe that people may not be familiar with what they are, and then what they do, maybe what an equivalent to another universe may be, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, the one tool that's outside of the original three realm that really just changed the game for me was OneNote. And at first I'm like, okay, what is this? It just seems like a note saving or note taking, you know, platform. And I wasn't sold on it until I finally realized and pictured OneNote as my filing cabinet, to where the OneNote itself is my full filing cabinet. And then within my filing cabinet, I'm going to have binders. And so in each of our notebooks, or binders, as I would call them, then I have different sections and then different pages within those sections. So now my whole OneNote is everything. And what I've done is I've created a master OneNote that I just keep all my stuff in, but then I will just copy it and whatever I need to use, and then I'll paste it into the current year for the classroom, and then I can distribute it to the students straight from there, to where they get their own copy of it, and I don't ever have to worry about my original getting deleted or altered or anything like that. But with OneNote, you can do, there's so many different things that you can do now. We've had kindergarten teachers actually using OneNote with their kindergartners, and which is crazy to think about, that we have 5-6-year-olds using it, but they are now using it, not the way that my fifth graders would, but they're using it to capture their ideas. They can take a picture and put it right into OneNote, and then they can annotate on top of that picture and make notes, you know, in a kindergarten kind of way. One really cool hack that we saw some teachers doing, which I just blew my mind once I actually saw this, is they would put into the OneNote the reading passage that they wanted the students to read. And the student would have a paper copy, the teacher would have the iPad, and as they're listening to the student read to get their fluency score, they would actually record directly in OneNote. So then that they now have an audio copy of the student recording. They're using their pen, they're writing on top of it, making their marks and making their notes as they go. And then later, at the end of the year, they can actually show the parents, show the kids, like, hey, this was you in August. Now listen to you reading in June. And the kids can hear their change. So with OneNote, you know, that's kind of the biggest thing right now. But there are some collaborative spaces that you can use it like a digital whiteboard. Microsoft does have a whiteboard platform as well. But you could have all the kids using a collaborative space and all work on something together, much like you'll use in Google. I think it's Jamboard, if I'm thinking right. I'm not a Google person, but you can all work on the same thing and do stuff. The other one that you mentioned was Sway. Sway is a different way to think about a PowerPoint, I guess, but you can do a lot more with it. You can have sections on the Sway, and it creates a web page. And it's a very visual, very well platform to present ideas and host video and stuff like that. It's kind of cool, but it's very underused now just because there are so many different platforms out there. And then the last one that I'm sure a lot of us are now getting more and more familiar with is Teams. And we really dove into Teams back in 2018. And we basically said, hey, we're going to use Teams as our official communication between the staff to get them used to it. And now we have students using Teams where they're having conversations with each other on the wall that are in there. They're uploading pictures. They're doing everything. They're doing their assignments. I mean, you name it, you can do it. It's your collaboration space. And then once the pandemic hit and we had to go to remote learning and whatnot, the Teams became everything to our video, to our chat. And, you know, come that, you know, I always talk about that Black Friday, which was our last day at school. Then the following Monday, when it was time to, you know, do school from home, the kids were asking us, okay, what do we do? What can we do now? And we're like, well, we have a week, you know, that we need to prepare and get ready for this. They're like, no, we're ready now. We use Teams every day. We're good. Let's go. And to have my students who, you know, you think hate school actually want to do stuff, it was kind of fun. And it's they're all these products are ever changing. They're evolving. And the Microsoft thing, what's really cool, Mike Tofson is very, very big on Twitter with his things. You reach out, you ask him a question, he'll get back to you because he's one of the big Microsoft education people. And if there's a feature, suggest it. And what we're seeing now is all these things that teachers have suggested from last March and forward are coming to Teams, and they're making it so much better that now as we go back to in-person learning, we're still using Teams, not in the way we had to, but now we're using it in a much different way and in a way that is relevant to the kids today.
Yeah, Teams has grown so much. It initially started out as a Slack-like tool, just a communication tool with different rooms for different, you know, teams, I guess, and businesses and groups. But they started incorporating the attachments of assignments or of artifacts. And I remember, I think it was back in 2016 when Microsoft was trying to figure out an answer to Google Classroom, and they were going out with Microsoft Classroom, you know, good with names, right? but it never came to fruition, but they ended up folding what they did into Teams. So Teams is now like your Google Classroom, your Microsoft Classroom. And I think that, well, at least on my part, kind of confused me a little bit, because I thought of Teams as a communication tool, not as the assignment tool, but it is. And I think one of the reasons that it kind of threw me for a loop is that unless you have like the educator version of Teams, you don't get that assignment thing. So I never saw it in there. So when people started talking about, oh yeah, you can assign assignments, you can grade assignments, I could never play around with it because I didn't have an education version of Microsoft Teams. But knowing that that's in there, it'd be great if Microsoft had like a, you know, a way for you to just play around with that stuff without having an education license, because, you know, that's great to know. Talk a little bit about more about the different ways that students are utilizing different modalities to convey information. You talked about Office Lens, but also voice and video and audio, all those things that can be incorporated in Teams as well. Correct?
Yeah, you know, the big one that everybody's going to go to with this is going to be Flipgrid. And, you know, they got the big Flipgrid Live coming up here shortly. Flipgrid has been an amazing, amazing tool. You know, we're not going to say it hasn't. And, you know, I say like, oh, Flipgrid. Yeah, everybody's heard of Flipgrid. But in all reality, that's huge. And they're continuing to come out with more and more stuff. And I'm excited to see what they come out with next. Within Flipgrid and within Teams, vice versa, you can now, you know, set up a prompt, send it out to your kids in Teams, and then through Teams, it'll link it to your Flipgrid and record it, and then it'll post it back to Teams. So it's all like this intertwined ecosystem where it just kind of works together, which allows those kids to do all, you know, everything under the sun with video. And now that you can turn the camera off, you can have just audio. I've heard of some teachers doing student-led podcasts through Flipgrid. And whatnot. So that's in there. You can now within Teams, you can also intertwine Adobe Spark and post those directly in. So with Spark, you got Spark Video, Spark Page, and Spark Post. Those can all just be dumped into Teams. I think Canva now has some integrations with Teams. It's crazy to think that all these things, which what we used to call is app smashing, and we'd have to do one thing in one platform and then another and then finally get it up to Teams. Now they all just communicate with each other. So, you know, props to all those companies for working with each other and not competing against each other. But yeah, it's awesome to see some of these things. A kid came up to me the other day in my summer school that I'm teaching now, and he's like, hey, look what I did within, he was doing it in Minecraft. And Minecraft Education Edition, he showed me this. And I'm like, how'd you do that? And because he did it, he recorded the video and then posted it to me through Teams. And I thought he was messing around just playing on Minecraft. But when it came down to it, he's like, no, I'm showing you how to do the area model with multiplication. I'm like, okay, dude, you just blew my socks off and I will let you do your thing because you're clearly working, even though it doesn't look like I would think it should. But you're at it, and I'm not gonna stop you on that. So yeah.
No, talk a little bit more about Minecraft, because, you know, Minecraft initially was just like a game, right? I think it was developed in the Netherlands, and you could buy, you know, download it off the internet or use it off the internet or buy the cartridge, but then Microsoft purchased it, and then you start hearing about Minecraft EDU, Minecraft in Education. Can you talk a little bit about that, how you use Minecraft in the classroom as part of the curriculum and what the students are creating and how the teachers are using it as well?
Yeah, you know, my son Zane, he would be yelling at me if I tried to talk about what the different characters and all the different whatevers are called, because I have no clue. The kids know that and know how to use it, so it's have fun. But what I've been using it for, because yeah, Minecraft started out as a building platform, building game. It's very pixelated. It is 3D, but you look at it, you're like, this is 8-bit, looks like Nintendo stuff.
It's like Doom, like Doom.
Yeah, the old Doom, yeah.
Yeah, 1994.
Yeah, and so it started out that way in survival mode, and then people started to realize that you can really take it from this game and build these elaborate structures. And, you know, from building the pyramids in Minecraft, and then somebody somewhere had the genius idea. I'm sure there's a lot of people, but saying, I'm going to use this in the classroom. And instead of just talking about the pyramids, for example, let's actually build them. How do you think they built the pyramids? And then the kids would have to problem solve and figure this out. Or another cool one that I've seen is the Jamestown settlement, where they would have to build their settlement and then sustain it. They'd actually have to, you know, grow the crops and keep you know, the bears from attack, you know, that kind of stuff, and survive. So it's turned from just a game to being in a new immersive world. In my summer school class right now, just today, you know, I mentioned the multiplication. We are doing some multiplication puzzle solving within Minecraft. And the kids, I mean, you walk by my classroom, you're just going to see the kids sitting there playing Minecraft until you actually stop and ask them, like, hey, what are you doing? And they're telling, they would, you know, tell you, hey, we're learning multiplication through this because it's in a different way. It connects with the kids the same way those base 10 blocks did when we were kids. The kids just like it in Minecraft. And it was fun because of the problem solving that you can do that you can only do in a video game because you can't mimic some of these things in real life. And, you know, seeing, I've seen amazing things with Minecraft. I've seen some really like boring, like that's what you did kind of stuff. But the highlight of my Minecraft was for our STEM showcase at the end of 2019. My class decided to make a one-to-one replica to scale of our whole school. And so I'm like, you guys don't have any clue how hard this is going to be. They're like, no, we're going to figure it out. I'm like, okay. And so lo and behold, they figured out how much one block in Minecraft, how big that would be in real life. And then they scaled everything from the floors to the ceiling height to the playground. Like, it was amazing. And I wish I could find that file to be able to show what they did. It's just, I've like 2-3 laptops since I had that one at school, but it was awesome. And the kids actually learned the difference between perimeter, area, volume, without even really knowing that's what they were doing. So it was really cool.
No, that's pretty amazing. And you know, Minecraft, I've never really used it, but I've allowed my students to use it. Right. Because if, you know, why not use the tools you're familiar with? And I would always tell this story when I'm talking about just, you know, the teachers to just relinquishing control and let your students showcase what they know in a way that brings them joy. And I would always tell the story about this one student who recreated a California mission. So in California, part of the fourth or fifth grade curriculum is you have to learn about one of the missions, the mini missions in California. You have to do research on it, that kind of stuff. Well, this student recreated the entire mission in Minecraft and then did a tour using screencasting of everything about the mission and gave all the information and everything like that. And the teacher gave the student a 0 because he didn't follow the rubric, which said it had to be a report, and he didn't do it in a report. And I always tell this story to say, what is the most important thing here? Is having the students showcase to you what they know and in a visible and viable way. And that's the important thing there. And so just because the teacher didn't understand what the student did to create it doesn't mean they didn't do their job. And that's a big changing point. When teachers are giving assignments, you should not have it to the point where you are dictating how that assignment needs to be presented. Just the different variables that need to be showcased, right? And then the magic happens by allowing the students to showcase their talents, to showcase what they know using the tools that they know. And so again, I don't know Minecraft, you know, from it. I've played around with it. I've built blocks and I've broken blocks. That's about it, right? But students know it, so let them use it, right? You don't have to know something to let students turn something in. And so I've always told that story just to get teachers to understand. You may not know how to use Minecraft, but your students do. And that's more amazing than reading a 2-page written report, right? And so, you know, that's something that we need to showcase. But that's why I wanted to talk about Minecraft, because I haven't used it with students. But I've seen that story before, and it's a very powerful story on how to do those things. Is Minecraft EDU part of the education ecosystem, or is it like an add-on? Is it something available to all educators, or is it a pay for school districts?
So my understanding, this is way behind the scenes stuff that I don't, you know, it's above my pay grade. But my understanding is traditionally it is an add-on. I think it's, I've heard something like $10 a kid for the year, you know, kind of a thing. But I could, again, I could be way off on that. But I do know that due to the pandemic and everything, Microsoft did make the EDU resources free all of, you know, last year. And I think they're still free through June of this year. And I mean, hopefully they would extend it out past that. But now we're talking, you can get the EDU stuff on your Xbox, on your iPad, on, you know, your phone, PC, all whatever platform you can do, even on your Nintendo Switch, which is what Zane's does his Minecraft stuff on. But Kyle, I had a question for you, and it kind of piggybacks off of what Joe was just talking about. In a situation, because I've not worked with, you know, in SPED or anything like that, which is, you know, your realm, in a situation like Joe just talked about, and you have a student who loves Minecraft, can build it, and you give them that scenario, like, hey, I want you to do this report and whatnot, and they can't write, you know, they can't do it, but they could verbally tell you everything about it and build it. How would you, because I'm really curious about this, to bridge that gap, how would you then approach that gen ed teacher and say, hey, Billy, Sally, you know, they can't write this, but they can build it in Minecraft and tell you all about it? Like, how are you going to bridge that gap into the gen ed classroom?
I'm going to do exactly what you just said. I'm just going to take it to the teacher and say, this is something that they can do. And then, right now, I don't have enough knowledge about Minecraft to really be able to explain it in better terms than what you just did. So I actually just was looking at the Minecraft website now for maybe getting that for my son for the Switch, because my son really loves Super Mario Maker 2, which is very similar, where he's building levels, except it's in the, instead of the Minecraft universe, it's in the Mario universe, where he can do the original Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario 3, I believe Mario 64, and then the more recent
Mario World
yep. as well. So he loves that game, and I really think Minecraft is something he'd really like to do as well. And I was checking to see, do they have this for Switch? And they do. So, because that's the platform that he plays a lot of these games on. So, but kind of backing up a little bit, with students now in the last few years, I've already done things using another Microsoft product, Flipgrid, where approach a gen ed teacher, listen, they're not going to be able to write you the 3-paragraph essay that you want. So they might be able to write a couple sentences, but that's not going to be able to get the point across that you're looking for. However, if I ask this kid a question, they can talk my ear off for the next 5 minutes about something. So why not let them do a video in Flipgrid instead that allows them to address the prompt that you want, but it's done verbally, where the kid can just rattle off everything that you need to know, whatever standards it may be, something that they're going to be able to do in a couple of minutes versus them agonizing to write this 3-paragraph essay, for example, or not even doing it at all because they're getting so discouraged that they can't do it. So doing this with Minecraft, that's just another tool in the belt now. So again, I need to do a little bit more investigating on it myself. And right now, I don't know of any teachers at my school site that are using Minecraft in education, but it's something that over the summer I might be able to learn a little bit more about it and be able to propose that to teachers around the school as a viable option for something instead of just the standard, you know, quiz or written assignment or whatnot.
Yeah. And, you know, as you were speaking there, the best way that I've found for myself to learn Minecraft is actually have the kids teach it to me. And I'll play dumb on a lot of it every year, you know, when I would start out, and I would project it on my screen, and I'd tell the kids, okay, tell me what to do. How do I do this? And then they're sitting there like, what do you mean you don't know how to do this? But they get this weird, like, sense of self-worth, entitlement, whatever. And then they just start yelling stuff out. No, you're supposed to do this. You're supposed to do this. And so I actually turn it into a way to teach them how to properly help somebody out, how to work in a group, you know, kind of a situation. Which it works really well. And then the other thing that you were talking about with the Mario Maker 2, which is, it's phenomenal. I love that game. Love playing it. They are coming, or they're not coming out. They just came out with a game called Game Builder's Garage, which it teaches the kids, or me, because I'm doing it with Zane, where we live stream that past couple nights, and where it teaches you how to build your own video game and actually play it, and then you can share it out. So it goes from that 2D world that you can do in the Mario Maker 2 to the 3D world. And I've seen, you know, Joe, you mentioned Doom. People are recreating Doom on the Nintendo Switch through this game builder's garage, and it teaches a bunch of those different things. So, you know, it's really cool. And as we're talking about these, I think we're going to have to do a future episode just called Sons of Tech Gaming or something.
No, you're absolutely right, because I hadn't used any Nintendo products in my classroom, but I used to use a product called GameStar Mechanic.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you would go in and be able to build this either side-scrolling like Mario or top-down like Zelda and build games, and you would actually have to play the games that was made by the company to learn how to build. And the entire arch was, it's all about storytelling. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a story to your game is not going to be fun. If your game is too hard, people are going to quit. If your game is too easy, they're not going to like it. So you have to have ebb and flows during your game. And so they taught you all about that. And then what we would do is I would have my students create content reviews as a game. And so they would, you know, be playing, and they'd ask people questions, and they would give them little clues of what the answer is for science. And then you'd come to a thing of three different doors, and you have to pick the right door. And if you chose the wrong one, you died and had to start all over. If you picked the right answer, you got to move on to the next level. And so the kids were creating test reviews by gaming. And I thought that was fantastic, because I just had to show them how to create it, and they just did all the other work. It was great. So I think we do need to have an episode on gaming, game design, game use in the classroom, that kind of stuff. Tyler, as we're ending this episode, I would love people to understand the levels of education certifications in Microsoft. And the reason I want to is because a lot of people know about the levels in Google. So in Google, you can get level one certified. It's a $10 test. The test, you get 3 hours to take the test. And, you know, it takes people probably the first time almost 3 hours to take it. But then if you pass it, you get that little badge, level one certification. And then level two is a little bit more difficult, a little bit more hands-on, a little bit more showing what you know and how you're using it in the classroom. That test is $25 to take that one. And then there's two more levels. There is Google Trainer. So after you get level one and level two, and you've been training people on how to use Google products, you can then apply to become a Google Trainer, you submit a video, application, that kind of stuff. And there's no limit to the number of people that can become trainers during those cycles. And then the top tier is Google Innovator. And that one is very competitive. Most people apply 4, 5, 6 times before they are accepted. And the cohorts are between 35 and 50 individuals at various locations. So that's a very competitive one. For Microsoft, you know, what are the different levels? Is there something analogous to a Google Trainer, something analogous to a Google Innovator, analogous to level one, level two? And how do you go about transversing those levels to achieve the top level?
Yeah, so you guys mentioned it on the previous episode about the Microsoft Innovative Educator. And that one is, you know, Kyle, as you've said, where it's go through and click a few boxes here, and if you get it wrong for the quiz, you can just redo it. It's true. You can just click through. I was just looking at that earlier today because a new course popped up on my feed, and I'm like, okay, let's look at this. And I just, instead of looking at all of the learning about it, I just went down to the quiz, and within about 2 minutes, I had the badge. So It's cool. You can learn some stuff through there, through what they call their Microsoft Educator Center, to get that badge. But it only takes 2 hours to really get that first Microsoft Innovative Educator badge. They also have a Microsoft Innovative Educator Trainer, which is kind of that next step. And you commit to train about 100 hours over a calendar year, just on various different Microsoft products, and you actually have to track it and a few things like that. That is not the route that I went, but I do know a couple people that have. The third one, the third tier, is the Microsoft Innovative Educator Expert, which is what I currently am, and I'm in the process to renew that for the upcoming year. Now, you have to become a Microsoft Innovative Educator in order to become the Educator Expert. So there are those tiers, you know, the levels that you have to pass. And last year when I applied for this, the way to do it, you would just send in a sway, or you could make a YouTube video and just briefly answering like three different questions and talking about why you should do this. And coming off the pandemic, I'm like, hey, I'll do this again. I'll try to do this again, because the previous year when I submitted it, so word to the listeners out there, make sure when you send in a sway or a video that you don't make it private, because Microsoft can't just go in and unclick that for them to look at it. So I got an email and I was really bummed. They're like, hey, we couldn't actually watch your video. So I'm like, ah, darn it. But so this year I went through and made sure everything worked, and I loved getting that email saying, hey, congratulations. And so since then, it's just opened up a bunch of different, I want to say benefits, but they're really just opportunities, where I'm part of a team in Teams about just the Innovative Educator Experts. I'm part of a private Facebook group, and you know, all these different connections that we've made throughout, where people are asking these questions, the same kind of questions you guys are asking me, but they'll ask it on the pages, and people from all over have been giving answers. And some of the hacks, you know, Joe, you're a hacker in the way of you do things, but some of these people come up with the strangest hacks you'll ever hear of, but then when you sit back and think about it, you're like, holy cow, that's actually brilliant of how they did something. So it's a really cool cohort of people. And this year, though, they're actually changing it. So as you guys were talking about it in the last episode, I'm yelling at my phone as I was listening to it while I was mowing the lawn. But they actually changed it this year. So there are three different steps, and you have to complete the first one, that you're Microsoft Innovative Educator. Then you have to become or do at least 2 more hours, if I'm reading it right, to get to the next part. But then you have to do a self-nomination, and you actually have to collect evidence. And part of that, you know, as you guys mentioned, was actually, you know, having to do things and prove it. So it's now at that point where, hey, you need to prove this, which is awesome. And there are short form questions. I'm looking at the application right here. There's some scored questions, some long questions, and all of these need to be done by July 15th. So in little less than a month, if you want to go this route, there's all these things you need to do. The people that in my district, we have three of us that are MIE experts, and we are going to be meeting up to work on these together and work through it so that we can make sure that we're getting these things done. But it opens up a lot, and it's, to me, it's more than just a quick little badge saying, hey, look what I am, because you actually have to do it and prove it. And again, that, you know, the deadline is July 15th to do that. And I'm sure we can get the info and the links into the show notes for the listeners, if that's something that they want to be a part of.
No, and that's great. I love the fact that the evidence posting is something that we are looking towards, because that's exactly what we were talking about in our episode last episode. Because, you know, like you said, having a badge is great, But having to work towards the badge, making the badge meaningful, is the most, most important thing. So I'm glad they are making those changes. I have to say, Tyler, thank you so much for, schooling us on all the different things that Microsoft can do, all the different changes Microsoft has made. Because again, I want to go back to 2012. A lot of people who were comparing the online version of Microsoft to what Google was doing, they had a bad taste in their mouth. But knowing how there's synergy now between the on-prem and on the web, knowing that all that stuff is now being worked with, I think a lot of people who maybe dipped their toe in the Microsoft well at the beginning but then took their toe out might want to start dipping in again. And they're doing a lot of great things. Sway is a great tool. It's a very great visually for storytelling and presentations. Love it. Flipgrid, everybody knows I love Flipgrid. I think that was one of the best purchases Microsoft has made in a long time. Minecraft and OneNote is a game changer when you learn how to use it. So a lot of great things in the Microsoft ecosystem. So I want to just say, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening to an Office 365 on episode 65 for our Sons of Technology podcast. And I also want to say this, teachers, we talked about certifications last week. We talked a little bit more about Microsoft certifications today, but please take a break, right? You may be doing summer school right now. You may be doing this or that, but find some time in the next few weeks to just take a break, to take a breath, relax, and just put your feet up and be like, man, that was quite a year. And then start looking into these things. Unless, as Tyler said, unless you want to get that MIE expert, because that is July 15th. That is that deadline. So, gentlemen, any final words before we go?
The only thing that I want to say here at the end is, and Kyle, it came from what you were saying about your son wanting to learn and play Minecraft. If you want to learn these tools, especially the funner ones, have fun with your own kids in your own house to learn it and treat it as a game. A lot of these things we can treat as games and have some fun with, and we can learn through it. And you might even realize some things about the platforms that you didn't know yourself. So involve your own family with your learning instead of shutting the door, going into the office, doing that stuff. Involve them, and it will make the world of difference.
Yeah, I'll just kind of piggyback that, because while we were doing this episode here, and Tyler, you were feeding so many great nuggets of wisdom here, I was toying around with OneNote, my desktop version of OneNote, and looking at all the cool things I can do with that. And then, I looked at that Minecraft website a little bit, and I already stuck Nintendo Switch Minecraft in my cart on Amazon to get that ordered up here pretty soon. So, yeah, I got some things to toy around with. I'm not sure how much I'll be able to use them in my school, only because we are in a Google environment, but it's something that I would love to become more well-versed in, because there are a lot of really cool things that are out there.
Yeah, I want everybody to remember as well that everything is constantly changing. Things are being constantly added and improved. And it's because of teachers like you who are putting those recommendations into the Google comments or the Microsoft comments, or talking to the Mike Tolfsons or anybody out there to get your version of what needs to be changed happen. So you need to be vocal, educators. You need to be out there on the socials showcasing how to make these tools better, because without teachers, these tools won't exist. So that is the key here. So thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Thank you so much for the hard work you've always put in as an educator, but especially these last 15 months. And we hope you have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. I know each and every one of us is a father. So happy Father's Day to Kyle and Tyler. And thank you so much for everything you do, your heart, your passion, and your talents that you are providing to our community and to just humanity. Because without teachers, I don't think the world would be would be as good as it can be. And so teaching is probably the most important profession in the history of the world. So thank you so much and have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful day. And if you're in California or Las Vegas, Nevada, stay cool.
Oh, you got that right. Have a good one, everybody.